This is exactly right.
Hi, I'm Erin Welsh.
And I'm Erin Alman Updike, and we're the hosts of This Podcast Will Kill You on Exactly Right.
We're back with our seventh season, which is bigger and better than ever.
Because guess what? We're now a weekly show.
This season, we're tackling everything from long COVID to norovirus, from the supplement industry to IVF, and so, so much more.
New episodes drop every single Tuesday.
Follow This Podcast Will Kill You wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to I Saw What You Did. My name is Millie DeCherico.
I'm Danielle Henderson.
And we're here to discuss film for film people and non-film people, right?
And movies. Can I call them movies?
Wait, are movies films? Are they motion pictures?
Let's do motion pictures. Let's bring motion pictures back. I'm going to going to the talkies.
You know, there's so many people that say, like, people are like, I love this film, I love this movie. And then there's like other branches of, like, you know, motion pictures, cinema, like, just, which is a weird, just saying cinema is weird.
Can you just imagine sitting next to someone like, what did you do last night? I went to the cinema.
Yeah.
You're like,
or they talk.
You also popped up here out of 1923. Like, what's up?
Well, right. And then I started thinking about how Peter Bogdanovich, the director Peter Bogdanovich, always says pictures. He's like, I love that picture. That was a good picture. And I'm like, I could never say that. Like, I just don't have the balls to say it. I don't have the right to say it.
The gravitas.
I feel like the only people that say that are like old guys in ascots, you know,
and my grandma. Patches.
Yeah.
And my grandma. She's always, that's a good picture. And I'm like, all right. That's what they grew up saying, I guess.
Yeah. I can't even say it like ironically. I just can't. I know. It just sounds too weird.
So, I'm okay with either. How was your week? What's going on in good old Florida?
Oh my gosh. I'm sorry if I was late at all. Actually, I think I might have been early today, but I was literally checking my temperature like five times before I showed up to this because I was like, do I have a fever? As it turns out, no, I'm just hot because Florida is 100 degrees. Well, I mean, it's crazy because it's like I grew up in the South, right? Like, I know a thing or two about humidity. And I mean, LA is hot on certain months, like desert hot, though. It's like you walk into the shade and it's like 30 degrees cooler.
Right.
Like Florida, the South is like, there's no relief. Like you can't even, you really just have to walk into like the most air conditioned building of all time in order to feel happiness. But, I mean, I was like, and on top of that, it's like, I think like most people with parents, like this house is hot all the time.
Oh yeah. Parents cannot get their shit together when it comes to controlling a temperature. They just want, if the thermostat could just say suffering year round, it would just be set to suffering. You're either too hot or too cold, but either way, they're not fucking with their bill.
And that's the funny thing too, is because I've tried to understand this, because to be honest, they were not like anti-AC people when I was growing up. But there was always like maybe a little bit hotter. Like the house was always kind of on the hotter side, but not where you're like sweating in your sleep. And, you know, my parents they're both from like southern hot foreign climates. So I'm like, maybe they just like they just don't like cold. But this is a next level where it's like at least 82 degrees in here. And I'm sweating all the time and I just feel hot. And so that's why I was like, okay, do you have a fever? Like, what's going on here? As it turns out, no, I'm just, somebody's running a dryer.
Somebody walked through the room and now I'm sweating. They added their body temperature to the existing climate. I definitely grew up in a non-AC household. Meaning we didn't even have AC in my house. We had like a box fan that you could put downstairs in the living room window. And my grandma would run it at night while she was watching TV and then turn it off. And I was like, this is not how any of this works. But it was also like a small town, so we could like sleep with our windows open. But at that point, you're just letting the heat in. And we had an old dilapidated barn in our backyard. And it was just like where all the animals played and hung out. And like, you want to think like, oh, it's like a little Richard Scarry novel. No, it was like possums and disgusting like skunks. And they would just like get together and have this funk. Like, so all summer was just this wave of funk coming in the window. And I would lay in my bed and just sweat like my own body shape into the sheets and be like, I got to get out of here. I can't live like this.
I know. Truly nothing worse than like sweating in a bed. Like, oh my God, I'd rather be sleeping in Antarctica with no covers. I can't take it. And like the thing is that when I moved to LA, like most places in LA don't have air conditioning. You're lucky if you have a window unit.
Right.
But you know, in Georgia, you have to have air conditioning. Like it feels like a non-option. You
know? Well, everyone would die. Like anyone over the age of 50 would die in Georgia if they didn't have AC going.
I will tell you, though, when I was in my 20s, I think it was like my first apartment that I ever lived in by myself. I lived in an apartment in Georgia that didn't have central air. And I literally was like, I should have just sued that landlord for not giving us air. Because I was like, and at the time, I'm like, you know, like 22 or 24. And I'm like, I don't want anything. I'm just like, well, I guess if it's hot enough, I'll just take my entire bed and push it into the living room where there's a fan.
Oh.
And I would do this for like 6 to 8 months of the year. So I don't understand. But anyway,
hindsight is incredibly litigious. Isn't that the saying?
Litigious. Yes. Exactly. But like, yeah. So how's it going with you? Like, how's LA?
I'm all right. You're not missing anything. I went outside today to get my mail. And, you've been in my house. I have like living on a one-way street and it's, you know, whatever. I don't talk to any of my neighbors. It's fine. I went outside and there was this car parked in front of my house and the trunk was open and there was a guy standing outside and a woman standing across from him. Neither one wearing masks, of course. Ooh. And he was holding this like old, like velvet and metal. It looked like an instrument of some kind, but it could have been like a calliope because I don't know what the hell those look like. Like it was just some old thing.
What's a calliope?
It's like,
exactly. Am I stupid?
No, it's like the music thing that plays in the background of merry-go-rounds and shit.
Oh, shit.
But he was holding it and he was just like, yeah, isn't this cool? He was like moving some parts on it. And she was like, oh my God, that's amazing. And I said out loud, like before I could even stop myself, I just said, I got to get out of here. Like I have never lived in a place that is more diametrically opposed to who I am as a person, but I don't need to walk out of my house and see a fucking old school calliope squeeze box and people being like, oh my God, I love it. I love it. So I couldn't do it today. And I'm like, put your fucking masks on if you're going to be squeezing a box out in front of my house too, please.
Oh God. And just to be like, yeah, that seems like an essential thing to be leaving the house for is to get this like turn of the century music machine or whatever.
In the year of our Lord 2020, while a goddamn pandemic is happening, you're out here with no masks on just to pick up this piece of tin that you think looks cool. Because what practical uses I have in your life right now? Zero. Well, it's just going to hang out in your house. You can't even have parties and show it off right now. It's just going to be some piece of shit in your house. So of course she has to act excited about it because she's like, yeah, he's putting this in the trunk. It's coming into our house. I can't stop this. Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing.
So the calliope industry has not suffered at all in the pandemic.
On the uptick. Other than that, I'm still upset. We talked on Tuesday, so you already know about this, but I'm still mad about my grocery delivery for this week. I use a grocery delivery service and I try to use it as much as possible because, you know, again, I'm the only person in LA who's still in lockdown. And you guys will get back. So I've been getting my groceries delivered. And I have to say, every time I use this service and my driver is male, I know my shit's going to be fucked up.
Uh-huh.
Every single I mean, every delivery has something wrong with it. They forget things, whole cart, you know, just forget things. I got some yogurt once, like little cups of yogurt, and four of them were just dented and smushed and like oozing out of the side. And I'm like, you couldn't get it from the store to your car to my house in one piece? Like, something.
Who's the best delivery person? Is it like an older woman? Like, who's like on average, who would be the best delivery person?
On
it can't
average,
be a guy. A young guy seems bad, right?
Young guys, no, get them out of my face. I think an older woman. And actually any woman, but especially an older woman. And I know this is sexist as hell, like women be shopping, but I truly think that most women I've had who've delivered my groceries have gotten it right every time. The replacements are on point. And they ask me questions. Yeah. Every dude is just zipping around the store, throwing shit in the cart, not looking at it, which is how I ended up with 3 turnips. I asked for sweet potatoes, and this motherfucker brings me turnips. And I'm like, all right, well, I know not a lot of people cook. Not a lot of people like to cook or know what food looks like. I get it. If you can't fix your mouth to ask someone in that goddamn store, send me a picture and be like, is this it? Because that's the app is based on that. Like, you can send me pictures. We can chat. We can talk. Don't just pick up 3 fucking turnips and then just give them to me like that's what I asked for. Because now I'm looking up recipes for turnips. I grew up on welfare. We don't waste food. Well, so I have to use these pieces of shit.
A simple Google search, though.
Yeah.
Like, I do that shit all the time. Like, I'm in Whole Foods. I'm like, what are these fancy ingredients? I still get like rhubarb and rutabaga confused. So every time I'm like, oh, I need to Google what this is because I want to know what it looks like.
You think I know what to do with a Romanesco? I don't know what to do with that shit, but I wouldn't buy it and bring it to your house and be like, here, I got you this strawberry bunch. Like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing with that shit. So I'm just mad because I had to like look up recipes for turnips like I was a fucking pilgrim. It ruined my like 3 meals.
A pilgrim with the internet.
A pilgrim with strong Wi-Fi because I don't know what to do with them because I've never cooked with them before.
Well, you better fucking hope Mario with the raccoon tail comes along and tries to get those turnips, because otherwise they're just gonna be sitting in your kitchen rotting,
growing roots, like just stretching out towards the sun in my windowsill. Like, I don't know what to do with these shits. I'm gonna turn them into art. They're now kitchen art. They're kitchen art. Oh my god,
we all
need
kitchen art. So all right, so for this week our theme is kind of like, you know, we always joke about how like every theme is going to be a recurring theme because we just like keep watching movies that like serve the theme that we will keep wanting to talk about. But this one, I think, is like one of my kind of favorite types of movies. And I think it's something that like we could definitely speak to. The theme for this week is kind of, it's about changing female friendships. Yeah. So movies that are more or less kind of coming of age stories that feature women who are friends and sort of like the slice of life of that, or the challenges of that, or whatever it is. But I don't know, there's a lot of movies that fall under this category.
Yeah. We wanted to I think we also should let you know here that we recognize that there are a lot of movies we could have chosen for every category that we come up with. But we try to find movies that just speak to it for us, like speak to the theme for us, but also things that you can find. So I know that, you know, if you're at home saying like, oh my God, there's this movie from Indonesia that would fit this perfectly, we're going to get there. But also you have to be able to watch it. Like, that's the whole point. We want you guys to watch movies.
So for this week, my choice is a movie from 1996. It's called Walking and Talking, directed by Nicole Holofcener.
I know you're busy. I know that you're having problems with Frank. I do. I know that. But you're so wrapped up in what's happening to you that you don't even know what I'm going through. Stop for a second and think of what it's like for me. That's all I want.
So this movie, I gotta tell you, like, I'm a huge fan of this director. I think a lot of people I know are. Her style of movies is very appealing to me. I mean, first of all, I like was a 90s cinema person and a 90s pictures person. But, you know, also it's like her style. I mean, you know, there was a lot of like female indie filmmakers in the 90s, and she was kind of, you know, one of the bigger ones, and her style of movies are very like slice of life. She makes really great dialogue. She writes really great characters, and this was her first film. So the synopsis is really just about two friends, Amelia and Laura. Amelia, who is played by Catherine Keener, who is was in every Nicole Holofcener movie. She was kind of like her muse, her like the leading lady for most of her movies. And then Laura's played by Anne Heche, and they grew up together. I would say maybe late 20s, early 30s. They're kind of like starting career, maybe like a few years outside of college. And, you know, it was clear that they were friends since childhood. Then they became roommates because they owned a cat together. And the cat's name is Big Jeans, which I think is super cute.
Best name for a cat.
The movie is essentially about their friendship. And they're clearly very close. Except now Anne Heche's character is getting married. And they live apart now. And it's the kind of thing where you're trying to figure out what your role is now that your best friend is now in a, you know, relationship and is getting married. And I would say that the thing that I love about this movie the most, I think, is that it's kind of setting it up to where it says that either scenario, being single or being married, is like always kind of like a mixed bag. It's not perfect. Like, yeah. You know, in Catherine Keener's character, in Amelia's character, you can tell she just kind of like doesn't really know, you know, what she wants in terms of romance. She kind of wants to date the video store guy, but thinks he's ugly. But then when, you know, she goes out with him, she realizes that she likes him, and then, you know, manages to fuck that shit up. But royally. Then, you know, yeah. And yet at the same time, she seems kind of comfortable with like being single. She's not like flipping out about it. I think with the Anne Heche character, you can tell she's, you know, excited to be with somebody and she's excited to be married, but it's a mixed bag for her too. She's wondering, okay, is this it? Am I not going to be able to talk to men anymore? I don't know if this is for the rest of my life. So that's what I really like about the movie, is that it kind of shows both sides of it. But ultimately, it is about their friendship and about sort of how you fit in after one of you changes. And I mean, there's a lot of great actors in this film. I mean, besides Catherine Keener and Anne Heche, who just have like very natural, they seem like they're just naturally friends. I don't know if they were before the movie was shot, but it was, they have a great relationship. But then just also the men in the movie, Todd Field, who plays Anne Heche's husband or fiance, he's great. He's supposed to be kind of corny. I think that's the message, that he's like, he just designs jewelry and apparently is really bad at it. And, you know, like, but he also is a human and feels like, you know, he's like not the total archetype asshole guy, right? That's like coming to steal the friend away.
He's super low key, and he's also really comfortable with Catherine Keener. And, you know, like they all kind of are all three friends together in some ways.
Yeah. And they, you know, to me, the character that there's two characters actually that I love besides Amelia and Laura, but it's definitely Kevin Corrigan as the video store guy. I think a lot of people remember him. I will say from personal experience, I have worked in a video store, and I've definitely known guys that read Fangoria and wear my Bloody Valentine t-shirts, and I'm like, they nailed him. They nailed that guy.
Dude. Memorize. Oh, just happens to have memorized your phone number and your membership number. Nailed that dude.
Yeah. I was like, I don't know if he was supposed to be working at like Kim's Video or something, but I was like, oh my God. Like, they nailed that guy to a T, right? Like, it's so enjoyable. It's enjoyable to see him. And he's like going to like taking her to the like horror monster makeup conventions and shit. I mean, I'm like, oh my God.
It was a delight. He is a delight in this movie.
And I have to be completely honest with you. I find Kevin Corrigan hot. So
yeah.
I don't know what that means. I love actors like him. He always plays dirtbag motherfuckers. Like, he's really good at playing like a creepy uncle or like a weird dude. And mm-hmm. I love that about him. And maybe it's like a Steve Buscemi thing where people are like, you know what? He's so original and he's so interesting that he's just hot to me. That's how I feel about Kevin Corrigan. So I don't know what's up with that.
I love it. I had to say it. But they kept calling him the ugly guy in this movie. And I'm like, but he's not. But then when you look at the other dude in the movie, the other
well, right.
The
when you entry. Look at Liev Schreiber, who is like, I mean, goodness gracious. I'm just like, first of all, like, he was like, I've watched this movie probably like 15 times. And I was like, he is hot as hell in this movie. And he's ripped. His
he
whole,
ripped
like his
up.
Arms.
He is ripped up.
Yeah. And he's charming. And that's the thing, because you're going, well, he's always asking for money and he always makes poor decisions, but he somehow, like, why am I rooting for him? Why do I want them to be together? Like, I'm like, he's supposedly like a bum, but fuck it if he ain't cute, you know?
And he's one of those people that I didn't get it until I saw him in real life. Like, he was just walking down the street in New York and I was like, oh, I get it. Yeah. Like, very, very cute. And I like that. I like the way that they wove in these dudes as a way to kind of not just exemplify, like, or kind of to draw attention to the different changing parts of the female friendship.
Yeah.
But also just the, I don't know, it seems like these guys were additive in their lives. And I like that.
Did you ever have that scenario of like, maybe it was you that was getting married, or like, you, like, did you ever have that moment of a friendship where, like, I mean, I feel like I had it maybe once really early in my 20s, but then eventually it kind of just, I'm like, oh, everyone gets married and I don't, so I don't give a shit anymore. But like, was that, have you ever dealt with a scenario of having to be like, how are we changing? And marriage.
I said it in that exact voice. How are we changing? Well, what was bizarre is that one of my friends got married and had a baby, and got married because she was having a baby when I was like 20. So like, wow. Right out of high school. And I'm like, okay, so that was a whole change in the situation because her whole life changed.
Yeah.
But I've never been in a position where like marriage itself changed the friendship or made me feel insecure. I think it's because a lot of my friends just kind of waited to get married. Yeah. So it wasn't like that rush. I'm in my late 20s. I got to do it. Like, a lot of people just waited. But also, I kind of feel like in the same way that Anne Heche's fiance in this movie worked, I kind of knew all the dudes by that point. So like, whoever was getting married, whether they were getting married to men or women or whatever, I felt like, well, you've been part of the club for a while. So like, I know who you are. I at least know you're not a chump. Like, I don't need to know the intricacies of your relationship, but you can hang. So it wasn't that threatening. And I also, I guess it's what's different for me too, is that I never wanted to get married. So I think if you put your own like spin on it, and if you're someone who really wants to get married and the people around you are all shacking up, of course it seems like that could be pretty painful.
Yeah.
But I always thought, yeah, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, fine. But yeah, like, it definitely, it wasn't something that was like a goal. So I think that is always interesting for me to see that side of a friendship when you're like, oh, somebody wants something that you have. And I don't think I've ever had it that explicitly. And I don't know, do you feel like your friends got, like, have you ever felt that in a friendship with another woman where you're like, this is changing because she's now with this person and she has changed into a different person?
You know, it's interesting because I'm exactly like you, where a lot, like, I had maybe one or two friends that got married early, like in early to mid 20s. Right. And for the most part, they were a little older than me anyway. And so it was that kind of thing where maybe they were just kind of on track to do it. And I remember actually with one of my friends, like, it was kind of the opposite issue where she was married and then was like, how come you don't call me to hang out at the and go to the bar with you anymore? I'm like, Because I don't, like, you got, you live with a guy and you're married to the guy. Like, I don't know. Like, maybe I'm the shit. I'm the asshole. Like, apparently, because I'm not asking you to, like, do speed at, you know, like a Britpop club or whatever. I don't know what else.
Like, that is an interesting point, though. And they bring this up in the movie where Catherine Keener says, you used to need me. When something happens to me, I tell you. When something happens to you, you tell Frank. So I think that it is easy to internalize as the single person in that relationship that, like, you have a built-in person. So if you want to hang out, maybe you're the one who has to tell me that, because otherwise I'm going to assume that, like, you pick the person you want to wake up next to and look at for the rest of your fucking life.
Yeah. And, you know, it's always such a, it's real like weird. It's just weird because I have gotten accused of that, like, from maybe more than one person, of just being like, well, you know, why did you assume that I'm, like, not, you don't call me because I'm married or something. Right. But I honestly feel that, by and large, I mean, a lot of my married friends, and especially after you have kids, it's like they just have, the priorities just change. And you're right. A lot of people, and myself included, when I've been in relationships, you just kind of, like, disappear into another thing. Like, you're just kind of, like, with other people. You have to consider other people. It's not just this easy breezy, like, yeah, I just do whatever the fuck I want to do, unless you have an extremely chill relationship. I mean, it's like most people, though, it's like a little give and a little take. And
right,
it's never been easy to, like, navigate any of that stuff on either side. They were kind of a codependent situation, right, in Walking and Talking. And I think that's the stickiest part to unravel, is just, like, the codependency and how you, like, get out of that in a lot of ways, you know.
Well, exactly, because so many female friendships are built on that notion that, like, we are surviving something together, whether it's just the experience of being girls and women or whatever it is, like, we're surviving something together. And when one person is ripped away or has ripped themselves away from that dynamic, it is a very lonely, fraught kind of situation. And I think that, I mean, I do feel that more, less with marriage, but more when people have kids. Like, when people have kids, then I know, like, we have nothing to talk about for, like, 2 years. In terms of the friendship, that's where, to me, like, the dynamics sincerely change. So I feel like that's more of the wedge in friendships that I see as an adult. And it's not even permanent. It's just, like, I know that this is what you're going through. And this is what you're dealing with right now. So I think that it's cool that they actually, I liked that this movie took it from the perspective of you're getting married, and not, because it does shine the light on how close their friendship was, that someone could be that upset that someone's getting married. And it wasn't even about her being single or anything like that. I think it was mostly just that fear of who am I without you?
Totally. And, you know, I know that it was the movie was basically written about the director and her best friend, who incidentally is now a therapist, but at the time was becoming a therapist. And I mean, I think that, like, that movie is pretty, seems like it was a pretty accurate representation of, like, how things were back then. But I think it's really real. I think it's a really, it's not, like, too dramatic. It's not completely over the top. It's just a simple story of, like, things change and we can't live together with a cat forever. Like, we have to grow, and how do we do that? And, you know, like, what do we want out of life? And, you know, hopefully we can continue this friendship forever, you know, and be healthy. And the only other thing about this movie that I absolutely love, and I think it's, like, so perfect, is that Billy Bragg is on the soundtrack.
Ugh.
Oh, my goodness. And it's, like, the two songs. I'm a huge Billy Bragg fan, but it's, like, the two songs from Workers' Playtime, which is literally in my top three, I would say three favorite albums of all time.
Like, yeah?
That, yes, absolutely 100%.
What are the other two? Not to put you on the spot.
One of them is definitely the Rockettes, which is an Atlanta band. I would really have to think about the third. But Workers' Playtime is in three.
So. Awesome. We'll do a bonus episode for the other ones, but I love that Billy Bragg soundtrack just instantly transported me to the 90s.
Oh my God.
In a shocking way. I was not expecting that.
I mean, honestly, and it's like the perfect song. I mean, there's like, well, she's got a new spell and must I paint you a picture, which like lyrically are like perfect for what the movie's about. And I'm just, I think it's such an incredible film for me. It's one of my personal favorites. I'm so glad we got to talk about it. And yeah, it's,
I love it's it. A good I one. Love that. My movie for the theme of changing female friendships is Me Without You. It was released in 2001, and the director is Sandra Goldbacher.
It was always the two of us, Marina and me, best friends forever.
You should dye your hair, Holly. You look like a virgin.
I am a virgin.
But you don't need to broadcast it.
I am. So when I thought of this category, and like we said, we had so many different options for what we could have talked about in here. Mm-hmm. But I think the reason I chose this movie is that it's one of the only movies, and I've seen it a dozen times, mm-hmm. but it's one of the only movies that feels to me like it really explores the pain of friendship as well as more than even, I would say, the joys and the glory of friendship. So I feel like it's a side of friendship that I just so rarely see represented in film, which is that desperation and the way that friends can be such a big part of your heart, but also the biggest source of your pain. And there's only like a particular moment in your life where that friendship is allowed to flourish. And it's usually when you're in your preteens and teens, right? Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to take a look at this. And it's a movie that I feel like it's underrepresented in most categories because I think that the cast is great. So you've got Anna Friel playing Marina. White Michelle Williams is playing Holly.
Thank you for saying white Michelle Williams, by the way.
She's pulling off a great, subtle British accent. The film is set in a synopsis of the film, I guess, would be that it's a movie about the story of a friendship between these two girls who have been neighbors and friends their whole lives. And it takes place in the 70s and 80s, and it sprawls both decades. So we're kind of starting in like 72, I want to say. You know, they've lived next door to each other their whole lives. So we're coming in on their friendship at a moment where it's very tender, but you can see as kids the distinctive personalities that they have.
Totally.
And you can also see, which I love in this kind of film too, is that this is really a film about how when you're that close to a friend, you are also by default close to or in the proximity of everyone in their family.
Yes. Oh my God.
So you 100%. Just like, you know, the parents' situation, you know, the siblings, and the sibling part is what really drives a lot of this movie as well. So you've got Oliver Milburn who plays,
oh my gosh,
who plays Marina's brother, Nat. And I love Oliver Milburn. I mean, he is such a great actor in general. And he also, yeah. he has a bit part on one of my favorite UK comedy shows. It was a show called Green Wing. He mm-hmm. has such a small part, but he is so hilarious in that show. You have to go find it and watch it. It is available on every platform. But his
I know that you are like a big British television fan, and I love it, but I had never heard of him outside of this movie. I didn't know if he was in anything else. So I only know him as Nat.
Oh, you're so lucky.
I'm lucky. I'm like, he is so fucking cute. I can't stand it. I cannot stand it.
You can tell from an early age that Holly and Nat have a connection mm-hmm. and they just like being around each other. And he's part of their friendship and he's part of their lives. And he's older. He's a little bit older. So it's kind of got that allure of like, oh, there's this one scene when they show the girls when they're kind of like the preteens, you know, like a year or two after we first see them. They show them in their like early teens, and she's looking through her bedroom window across at him in his bedroom, just listening to Reckless Eric on his bed.
Oh my God, I love
in
it.
Under like tidy whities, just dick flopping, just doing his thing. And I'm like, girl, you have good taste.
He is like kind of my dream guy. So like ex-punk rocker, but like well read. He's like, you can tell that there's like a soulfulness to him, that there's like a depth to him, that he's like, you know, not about the bullshit type of guy. He reads Crime and Punishment in bed. Give me a fucking break.
Give me
a break. Like,
oh. And he's like, kind. He's nice. He's not like, you're shitty little kids. He's like, I see you as people. Yeah. And I'm nice to you.
I can see why Holly like was all about that shit. So,
and it's, and that again, to me, in terms of like the changing female friendship, the thing that was interesting to me about this movie as well is that I kept questioning, is this a friendship built around men or disrupted by them?
Yeah.
Because they have their own thing going on. Like, they're each their own people, and Holly is kind of mousy and quiet, and that's instilled in her from a young age, even from her mom, that like, well, some people are smart and some people are pretty. And she clearly thinks like, Marina's pretty, you're smart. But that doesn't do justice to either one of them.
Yeah. And I think Marina, there's a lot going on with Marina, obviously. There's a lot of issues there. And I think that the movie is a lot about how friends navigate men, how women are almost like by design, by patriarchy's design, they're supposed to fight each other for men.
Right.
And they're supposed to be territorial, and they're supposed to find value in their attractiveness towards men. And that is, I think, a huge component of female friendships in general. And I wouldn't say just female friendships, but a lot of friendships where men are desiring whoever it is, you know what I mean?
Right.
And it's tough because you can tell that, I mean, just throughout the movie, like, yeah, it's just a constant theme that comes up. And Marina is got a lot of issues with around men.
Marina was born a bomb. Like, she is just born a ticking time bomb. And a lot of the issues of their friendship come through in men, but are really about her and her brokenness and her sadness, which is why I like that we got to see the families so much, because you could see very clearly, well, this is the map of how they learn to love. And their love is so needy. Both Marina and Nat have a very needy kind of love. And they make horrible decisions as a result of that. But yeah, that she is just this movie is so hilarious in so many interesting ways to me. Like that scene where they are going to this party dressed in actual garbage bags, and Marina is like got hers tight and belted. It looks like a dress and it's got a slit. And Michelle Williams is literally wearing a garbage bag. Like, she's just wearing a sack bag. And this is a moment of such tenderness because it's about virginity and sex. And, you know, Marina's like, I'm going to do everything. And for her, everything includes doing heroin in a garbage bag. And
you're so right about that.
She is just doing the most. Holly's like, you know what? This is great. I'm just going to have like, she has this beautiful, romantic kind of loss of her virginity. And Marina's is a disaster.
Yeah,
but her way of dealing with it is to take it out on her friend and kind of take it out on her brother and her friend having this closeness. And it's just, it's very interesting to me because I think that as much as this movie is infiltrated by men, and we are going to talk about Kyle MacLachlan.
Oof. Yes,
who
we
needs
are.
To calm all the way down in this movie. He's a
perfect dirtbag.
He also, this so many moments where that we're gonna watch a lot of movies, I think, where we're just gonna find a lot of classic movie fuckboys, and Kyle MacLachlan is one of them.
I know, it's like, and we got a classic movie fuckboy count in this movie. Yeah, it's gonna come up again and again.
We're gonna have like I'm just scratching into my wall jam style, like the slashes.
It's gonna be like fucking slashes all over. Yeah.
But there's this real, by the time that men are coming into their life in a sexual way or in a way that's kind of, you know, makes them really heightens the situations of the friendship, there's already so much there that they have to work on. And it really, this is again like one of those friend or foe friendships that I don't really have too much relationship with. Like, I don't have a lot of relationships like this. I think it's like when you have a friendship that's built on the fear of losing one another or losing yourself or not knowing yourself, that it's, it just seems like this was a more, it just, I guess it seemed like this is a more volatile relationship than it was a good one. Like, there are very few moments where I'm like, they're good friends. Like, they should definitely be friends. And then that just makes me question, are these the kind of friendships that should run their course and then you're done with it? And usually there are markers in life that kind of help you shed those friendships, like marriage or college or moving.
Yeah. I have had a friendship like this when I was young and when I was, you know, like kind of their age, it's sort of like that garbage bag period. And, you know, like I would say that, I mean, not to like put myself into the movie or anything, but I was definitely the Holly character.
Same
where girl. I was friends with a more kind of conventionally beautiful, like magnanimous, like kind of popular-ish girl who I think needed me to play a role in a lot of the friendship, which is unfortunate, but it happens. I see how it happens. I think it's a lot of times there's people who just can only function in very like in relationships where they know where they stand, because it's not fun to not know where you stand with your friends or whoever. And I think that in the movie, Marina can count on Holly to be the one that she can dump on and that she'll always be there. It's like she's just sort of like, I can make her, humiliate her and make her feel like shit, and she'll never leave because we're just so tightly bonded. And I, you know, I can project all my issues onto her and she won't budge. And, you know, sometimes, especially in female friendships, there is a competition. There is, especially when you get to a certain age and like there's guys around, and it's like, you know, and I think that was the case for me, was that it was that like suddenly the guys enter the picture.
And then you wanted like your own experiences and you weren't able to get them, or?
No, I think it was more just sort of like, why didn't I have this like kind of cavalier attitude towards guys and dating? And why was I being such a prude, or why was I being overly cautious about what I did? Like, why wasn't I doing heroin in a garbage bag? You know, it's like that kind of thing where I was put in that place all the time where I'm like, you know, why do I give it a second thought? You know, whereas my friend was very wild and was doing lots of drugs and, you know, basically sleeping around and was, you know, like kind of like, why don't we do this together? And I'm like, because I don't do that. You know what I mean? And I just felt kind of like a little bit embarrassed by it from her. But I also understood why she did it. She ultimately had a lot of problems herself. And that's not saying that, you know, a person who does that has problems all the time, but, you know, just in that friendship.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And I think that is what's fascinating to me, because I think in any friendship or in any relationship, if it's predicated on the idea that you stay who you are, that is not a friendship that's going to last.
Yeah.
You know, like if there's not room for growth or evolution for either part. And the connective tissue of friendships when you're younger is everything is the same. We go to the same school. We know the same people. Everything's the same. We're eating the same lunch. Like, it's all the same. So if you get to a point where like you want to do heroin in a garbage bag and I want to stay at home and like read plays, that is an offensive move in your youth. Like it's an offense almost to the friendship, because it's like, why are we not doing all the same things all the time now?
Right.
I don't feel like I know you as much.
Right.
So that's like really interesting to me that you had that kind of friendship.
So what's your take then on the Daniel character? So Daniel is Kyle MacLachlan, and he plays this like teacher at their college, because I guess they're in their college years now, who's this like hottie French philosophy professor or something.
Just out the gate was like, let me speak about Baudrillard in French and then make some jokes about Adam Ant and then go get a beer with you guys. Like, take it down a notch, dude.
That guy, the American hottie professor, cool guy.
Ugh.
But they both go for him. Well, let's just say this. Holly, you can tell it's like, this guy's up my alley because he's deep and sensitive and he's an intellectual, and that's my guy. Marina, though, does she want the challenge? Does she want the attention? Like, what's your take on why they both ended up sleeping with the guy, essentially?
Yeah, I think with Marina, it was really vindictive, like straight up vindictive. But there's a part of her, of this character, that feels like so hurt to me that she knows what she's doing, but she's so selfish in that need for love that she doesn't care that she's doing it.
And I think that she also, and this is just kind of my quick read on it, like, there, she talks about how men are scum. She was wearing that shirt that says, I hate men, which I'm like, can I have that shirt?
I want that shirt.
Me too, right? And, you know, and it's clear, like, throughout, like, when you learn about their family, the dad is, like, a total, like, come and go guy. And in her mind, I think that she is kind of trying to sell Holly on the idea that men suck and that she should not be in relationships with them. She Marina will do everything she can to sabotage the relationships, even the one with her brother, mostly the one with her brother, I would say. And then to the end of where Holly's just going to not ever date and then be
there for Marina. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that I felt that so strongly as well, that she's just, there was so much of her sabotage that was just built around this notion of, see, I told you so.
Yeah.
And not realizing her own part in hurting Holly and in hurting her friend. So it was kind of the ultimate lesson, the ultimate example, but in the worst possible way and with the worst possible sacrifice. And it really, it's just, I just love movies like this so much. And they also have that kind of, and Walking and Talking had this too. Like, I like seeing the secret language of friendship.
Yeah.
So in Walking and Talking, where she's like, oh, I ordered for you. Like, knowing your friend's order, or like in this movie, there are so many like secret language things. Like, we're in a bath together smoking a cigarette while my parents are duking it out downstairs. Like, I love that kind of shit. Cause that's the real, again, like that tender connective tissue of friendships, that those are the parts that solidify friendships without you even knowing it.
Yeah. Although I've never taken a bath with my friend. Have you?
I've never done that.
Okay.
I don't know. I didn't do that. I don't take baths with people.
I didn't either. I mean, I was a little wild. I got to admit, I had some wild ass friends, but I think the only time I ever was in a bathroom with somebody, like in a shower, was when like my friend vomited on herself and I was trying to like help her out. But I never took a full-on bath with someone. And I certainly never smoked a cigarette from my friend's foot.
You're like, not sober. I've never done a foot cigarette sober. Oh, Lord. But that is like so wild to me. We're like, I guess when you grow up with someone and you have that closeness, like you're not ashamed of your body. I don't know. I learned body shame really early, I guess.
Oh, me too. Girl, I was Catholic, so you know.
There was none of this. Like, will I strip down now in front of anyone and everyone? Of course. I have to check that I'm wearing pants when I go out and get my mail, because there's just so much of my life right now where I'm not wearing clothing, but not with my friends. I don't know. I just don't have a body closeness with a lot of my friends.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm definitely a hugger, but I never went to full on naked in sharing the same bath water with someone. So,
I mean, I guess we all have room to grow, places to go. I think we're definitely going to revisit this category. And I think that it's, I don't know. Do movies like this hit differently at this point in our lives? Like, do you think that these are both movies that we've both seen a bunch of times, but I remember feeling like, when I first saw Walking and Talking, I was like a teenager, basically.
Yeah.
And I remember feeling like these people, like they all suck in their own way. Like, this guy sucks. Like, all these guys suck in some way, except for Frank. But now I kind of feel like, oh, yeah, like I can see how relationships are self-sabotage and I can see how friendships are changing and evolving. And I don't know. I just feel like I feel very grateful to be at this point in my life and have gone through so much with so many of my friends. And we've come out on the other side of it. And, you know, friendships with women, having friendships with each other is important. I think it's really, it enhances, it's enhanced my life to have so many close female friendships. last year for my birthday, I went to Amsterdam and I took two of my oldest friends with me, and we stayed on a houseboat, but I wanted to do a canal cruise like really badly. And these are both of my friends have like families and kids, and it was like a really nice getaway for them. But a real way for us to kind of connect in a very middle aged style.
Yes.
And so we booked ourselves, like we booked this canal cruise. I'm like, oh, this is going to be so great. And we got on this boat, and after like 10 minutes, we're just sitting there at the dock waiting, and this guy comes and he's like, oh, are you this party? Like, you're supposed to be on this other boat. And we're like, oh, okay. Cause we thought we're going to have like, you know, we booked like a wine cruise.
Yes.
So we hop on this other boat, and it's like, it's all couples. It is all, we booked, inadvertently booked ourselves on a romantic cruise. Like sunset cruise through the Amsterdam canals. They were playing like Lady in Red. I mean, it was like,
oh my goodness.
They had wine, they had cheese, and all this. And we had the best time because I'm like, this, our friendship is a different level of romance in a way where like we are close and fun. And it's just so, it was hilarious. And it was just one of my favorite moments of life where like I was just on a romantic canal cruise with two of my closest friends.
That's so amazing.
And it was awesome. It was awesome. But female friendships are hugely important. And changing female friendships as we get older, I think that I'm just excited to see where it goes. Like, I want to be on a porch with gray hair, like a Holly Hunter in, what was that, Top of the Lake?
Yeah.
Like a severe gray with all of my friends just sitting on a porch talking shit. Like, imagine what it's going to be like in like 20, 30 years.
Yeah. I hope that the world exists in 20 or 30 years, but when it does, I'm definitely not dyeing my hair, and we can all, you know, trade paperback romance novels, knock on each other's trailers, and live out in the desert. And I'm down for that.
So one thing that we are very much looking forward to doing is fielding your questions for Millie about film programming. And that could take the shape of what I've got a party coming up that I want to show a couple of movies. Which one should I pick? To how did you get into film programming? Why did you pick this movie for TC? No, I'm kidding. Don't ask her why she picks particular movies for TC.
I answer that question all day.
Don't do it. She still gets handwritten letters from people asking her those questions.
True.
But if you want to ask and send your questions to I Saw What You Did Pod at Gmail, then Millie will help you get your movie fixed together with your friends and your family. Because you don't know what your Aunt Verna wants to watch. People always are like, oh my God, this sex scene came on and I was so uptight. And I'm like, my grandmother used to fall asleep watching Cinemax, like porn. So it's fine. Like, but some people don't like that. Some people don't want to watch porn with their grandparents.
Listen, that shit just happened literally two nights ago with me and my mom. We were watching some movie where Kate Winslet and some hot guy, Patrick something. It was like a movie where they were naked and having sex in a laundry room. And my mom did the whole thing where she went, what is this? What is this, a porno? Like, what is this? And I was literally looking at my phone, pretending to not be in the situation, because I was like, I don't even, oh my God, I'm like 42 years old and I'm having the same thing happen to me. I was just like looking at my phone going like, what are you talking about? I'm looking at Twitter.
I'm only listening to the movie. That's how we would consume movies, as you listen to them. Oh, that is the best. Well, Millie will help you with all of your film programming needs and questions. So send us an email, and we've got one now that we can read for you and that Millie can help you with.
Yeah. Well, I think our producer Lauren is going to come on and maybe grab something from the mailbag.
Okay. My question for you that I'm totally pulling from a mailbag right now is, I like horror movies, but I would also like to find something to watch with my mother, who does not like horror movies. Do you have any ideas?
Okay.
Why you want to scare your mama?
So, I mean, why don't we just like talk to your grandma again? She can just tell you why you should be watching horror movies.
Yeah, I will give your mom my grandma's number, and she will have a list for her by the end of the week.
Yeah. here's what I have to say. I think that when it comes down to moms, maybe in particular, I think that they are averse to like gore and, you know, like the slasher element to some horror. I think if you take it down a notch and just go the thriller route, if you went like psychological thriller, I think that's a good meeting point because it's scary, but it's not bloody normally, unless you're watching like some crazy, you know, genre mashup thing. But if you take it to like a thriller level, I think that that's the good meeting point. And I don't know how old your moms are. I don't know if they're into older movies. I would maybe go the Hitchcock route. If they're into, if they're a little older, maybe a Hitchcock, like, you know, maybe something with Cary Grant. He seems to razzle the moms a little bit. Or if they're a little younger, if they're like, you know, my age or something, which is entirely possible, I would go for like a 70s or 80s, maybe even 80s or early, even early 90s, like a Copycat or a Sleeping with the Enemy starring Julia Roberts, like something like that. That I think is like a good medium. It's like scary and not super duper violent. And you know, I think that's a good angle. That would be the good meeting point. Good thriller about like either like a prank phone call or some kind of devious husband or like a stalker, maybe. But a sexy stalker, maybe like a Brian De Palma, maybe a little too much for your mom. But, you know, something like that. That's my suggestion for you and your mom.
I'm not a film programmer, but you know what I'm going to suggest.
What?
Ernest Goes to Camp.
Stupid. There are terrifying elements to Ernest Goes to Camp.
Those teeth, first and foremost.
Yeah. Like that.
Real close to that camera.
That cinematic universe has moments that are just bone chilling in my mind. So.
Oh, that was awesome. I can't wait to get more questions from Millie. I saw what you did pod at gmail.com. And that's it. Do we want to give them the movies for next week, but not tell them the theme and let them guess? Why don't you guess? Why don't you hit us up on our Instagram, on our Twitter, and tell us what you think the theme is going to be based on the movies we're going to give you?
Yeah. So our Twitter is I saw pod. I is the letter I, SAWPOD. And I believe that's the Instagram too, right?
It is indeed.
Okay. And then our email address again, if you wouldn't mind.
I saw what you did pod at gmail.com.
So the movies for next week are Robert Altman's Three Women from 1977 and Clute from 1971, directed by Alan J. Pakula.
Awesome. Well, I cannot wait to tell you guys the theme, but let's see if you can guess it first and watch these awesome movies.
And thank you, Danielle, for coming with your movie this week. It was so great to watch that again.
I had such a great time watching Walking and Talking again, and it made me feel good in a way that I wasn't expecting because I have a cold, bitter heart.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks, we'll see you next time.
This has been an Exactly Right production. Our producer is Lauren Elizabeth Brown. Our engineer is Katie Levine. Our social media assistant is Taryn Matza. Our theme song's by Tom Breifogel. Artwork by Garrett Ross. Our executive producers are Georgia Hardstark, Karen Kilgareth, and Danielle Kramer. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at iSawPod. And please listen, subscribe, or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen.